Stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live, but first, here's our Denver Bible Church update. Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Enyart of Denver Bible Church. I'd like to invite you to come on out and visit us. The Bible is such a fascinating book, of course. It claims to be the Word of God. Is it? Well, you look at the evidence. And we at Denver Bible Church, along with millions of others, have looked at the evidence and believe that, yes, the Bible is God's Word. The book of Genesis starts off the whole story, and that book is so fascinating, yet there are many details in Genesis that perplex Christians. Let me give you a few examples. Jacob, in the book of Genesis, Jacob is the father of Israel. He has 12 sons who become the 12 tribes of Israel. Well, Jacob has a brother Esau, and Esau was the firstborn. Yet for some reason, Jacob gets the birthright, the right of the firstborn, the inheritance, and it's through Jacob that God's covenant passes through, and the Messiah comes through Jacob, not Esau. And that's a little unusual because Esau was the firstborn, and normally the firstborn receives the inheritance and the blessing, the birthright. Well, what happened? Well, when the two were in the womb, Esau was coming out first, but then Jacob grabbed Esau's heel, almost as though he was trying to pull Esau back in and take the place of the firstborn. And so they noticed that, the midwives, and so they called him Jacob, which means supplanter or deceiver, as though he was trying to supplant or take the place of his brother. And then his brother was starving one day, and rather than being kindly to him and offering him food, he wouldn't give his own brother any food unless his brother agreed to sell him his birthright for a pot of stew, red stew. And so sure enough, Esau agreed. And by the way, Esau is then called Edom, and Edom is the same name for Adam, and Adam means red. But at any rate, then later, Jacob's father, Isaac, was old and blind and ready to bestow the birthright on his son Esau, and Jacob deceived his father and dressed up as though he were his brother and took the skin of goats and put the skin on him so that his hands would look, seem to be rough and hairy like his brother Esau. And he lied through his teeth to his father, and he got the birthright. And so, lo and behold, the messianic birthright passed not through Esau, but through Jacob. What's with all that? Why is it that way? Why is it this lousy brother lying, deceiving Jacob that gets the messianic blessing? Why? Well, it perplexes a lot of Christians. And if you don't take the Bible and look at the overview of the Bible, so many of the details will confuse you. For example, in the book of Genesis, when Jacob took Esau's place, that's not the only sibling swap. But remember Isaac. Abraham didn't only have Isaac, right? He also had Ishmael. And Isaac took Ishmael's place. And Jacob had grandsons who the two half-tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, and Ephraim took Manasseh's place. And you know, the story just keeps going and going where there are five siblings in the book of Genesis that get swapped. Jacob goes to marry Rachel, and he ends up with Leah. How'd that happen? Well, what do those sibling swaps, what do they all point to? Well, they all point to this, that Jesus eventually swapped places with Adam. Jesus took Adam's place. Jesus took Adam's punishment. He took Adam's inheritance, so to speak. He deceived death, and he took what Adam deserved, the punishment for the sin of the human race. So the Bible makes sense at every level. If you come on out to Denver Bible Church, you can study it with us. This is Bob Enyart. Now stay tuned for Bob Enyart Live.
Service with the weekend. I'm not.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyar, America's most popular, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number here, 1-800-8-ENYAR, 1-800-836-9278. Today is October 16th, 2003, the second day in which our court system is starving to death an innocent woman in Florida, Terry Schindler Schiavo. And according to an article on WorldNet Daily by Sarah Foster, Florida Governor Jeb Bush has the authority and the legal obligation to use his executive powers to halt the death, the killing, the murder of Terry Schindler Schiavo, and to launch a criminal investigation into the case. According to attorneys queried by the governor's legal office yesterday, not only does the governor have such power, but the governor has the constitutional duty to prevent any action taken pursuant to such a court order because such action would violate Ms. Schiavo's constitutionally guaranteed inalienable right to enjoy and defend life, regardless of her physical disability. And that is as secured by the Florida State Constitution, Article 1, Section 2. That's according to constitutional attorney Herb Titus of Chesapeake, Virginia, in a memorandum that attorney faxed to the governor's legal office. In fact, I think you could read the entire memorandum at Terry's website, terriesfight.org. So Titus is one of the constitutional experts contacted by the governor's office. And he, you might recognize his name because he represents Judge Roy Moore in that battle in Montgomery, Alabama, regarding the Ten Commandments. So more on that story and other news. But first, we'll go to the phones, 1-800-8-ENYAR. That's 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to Arlington, Virginia. Lawrence, speak your mind.
Sir, I was going to say that I've been picking up his over the last like year or so kind of a disconsolate feeling within the Christian community that it's like, you know, we're getting beat on all these fronts. The right to abortion is being expanded. Gay rights are being expanded. Mm. The right to take human life by the state as a matter of administrative convenience is being expanded. Mm. And I was thinking more along the lines of the book of Isaiah, you know, the things have to get really bad before they get worse, but a remnant seems to be awakening around this. You know, when you have all the kind, soothing, misleading words, suddenly you see what the adversary forces mean with their words, and it kind of like is shocking people to their senses.
Yeah, that's true. That happens. The darker things get, the brighter the light of Christ and those who are willing to carry that light. And so we just, you know, we'd rather it not be that way. We'd rather the country not have to go into a time of such overt wickedness that the remnant of Christians who are willing to stand up for the truth, you know, be seen. We'd rather they stand up just every day of the week. But, Lawrence, so you're saying you think that there's a remnant of Christians that are coming to the fore because of the battle being engaged as it is.
I think that they weren't aware of how important their faith really was, and then all of a sudden something comes forward that just shocks them into the awareness that this is the slippery step on this steep slope that we've been told the words niceness, tolerance, and compassion are used, and suddenly we have an adulterous homosexual as a bishop in the Episcopalian Church.
Yeah, right.
And he's still, I believe, living, you know, openly, you know, with his homo partner.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting back saying, wait a minute, what I heard was kind, tolerant, compassionate, and helpful. And what you meant was, we're going to do an end run, and this is our goal. And so all of a sudden, a lot of people in the Episcopalian Church, I'm talking about from their developing, from their fastest growing communities, Latin America and Africa, have told them, we want to disaffiliate with you. This is a sign of such wickedness, such evil, that we want to not be at all, have anything to do with this part of the Anglican community.
Imagine how evil it'd have to be where even the Episcopalians could spot it.
Well, you see, that's just it. The difference is these are the Episcopalians who are having to...
actually love God.
They've made the choice to conversion.
Right.
They weren't born into it over the last 100, 200 years. They've made the choice to conversion. The Episcopalians sold them Jesus, and now they're offering them legitimacy for homosexual, adulterous homosexual bishops.
Let's explain something that may be a new listener to Bob and Yurt Live. Now, you're in Arlington, Virginia. You must obviously listen over the web.
Yes, sir.
At kgov.com. Well, let's explain something to new listeners who might not realize in your neighborhood churches, many of them belong to mainline denominations. And many of those denominations have grown cold toward the gospel. In fact, they even have become enemies of the gospel, many churches within major denominations, so that just because you go to a mainline denominational church, that doesn't mean that your pastor is actually a Christian. He, she, or it, for that matter, may be a pagan, may utterly reject Jesus Christ, but use his name because it helps to keep the paycheck coming. And so you've got mainstream churches, and I think Jesus gave us an insight on this when he talked about the wineskins.
Old skin.
He said you can't put new wine into old wineskins. And of course, the primary meaning of that, the interpretation of that, was that he was there to provide the blood of the new covenant, and the new covenant didn't fit in the old covenant. The old covenant with Israel's priesthood and the animal sacrifices and the symbolism, that all pointed forward to the time of Christ. But when Christ would shed his blood, then the new blood of the covenant would break the old covenant. It no longer would fit. And so he was telling them to get ready for the new covenant in his blood, because the whole Jewish priestly system pointed to the Messiah who would shed his own blood. That's what Jesus meant when he said you can't put new wine into old wineskins. But then there's a secondary application, which is the new wine is the gospel, which is always new. And the wineskin, that's the infrastructure that you use to share the gospel with other people. So Christians will set up a hospital, maybe a food bank, a homeless shelter, a church, a denomination, a college, and they set it up in order to be a tool to share the gospel with others. But pretty soon that tool gets old and the gospel remains new, and the gospel no longer fits in, for example, the United Methodist Church. We'll be right back.
Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or kgov.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. Here at Bob Inyart Live, we've got mostly a volunteer staff. People come and go. And we've recently had some, you know, one staffers gone on to do other work. And so today I was making dub masters, which I don't really know how to do, editing masters, making dub masters. And I saw that we have the album of Colossians now is available. Colossians. And we're so excited about that. And we've just begun the study in the book of Esther. And the folks who benefit from this, these Bible studies most regularly, are those who've signed up for our monthly Bible albums. You get a subscription, you call us up or go to kgov.com, and for $34.95 a month, automatically you get in the mail a Bible study album. And you can start, if you'd like, you could change it, but we start you out with an overview of the whole Bible. And over the months, you'll get Bible studies on topics like the last days, predestination and free will, the law of Moses. But basically, we go through many of the books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Deuteronomy, the book of Ruth, Samuel, and into the New Testament, the Gospels, right through Revelation. So call us and study with us. one 800 8 NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So I think Lawrence hung in there, so we'll go back to Lawrence. But our phone number is 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. So, Lawrence, for where you're at in your Christian life and your understanding of the world and the church, it makes sense to you that many churches and Christian ministries are no longer really Christian?
Almost to the point that they're anti-Christian, from what I can see.
Right.
And that's a sad thing to say. It's a sad commentary. But
let me ask you, that's a claim you just made. Does the Bible support that claim? And is there any predictions in the Bible that people who, you know, live and work in our churches might be enemies of God?
That they would be lukewarm and he would spew them out?
Well, there's one in the book of Revelation chapter 3. Jesus is talking to the church of Laodicea, and he said, I'd rather you were hot or cold. Because you're lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. That's one. That was within the church. And then he said he warned us of wolves dressed in sheep's clothing. And he said, many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and deceive many. And he also gave all these prophecies of the kingdom. We're studying this in Sunday school right now at Denver Bible Church in Matthew 13, where he said, the wicked and the righteous, they'll live and work, grow together, and they'll be separated at the end, at the judgment. When the wicked will be sent to everlasting torment, which is really just life apart from God. So, yeah, we expect that there'll be wicked people who will be in our churches as members. There'll be elders of church boards. There'll be directors and presidents of church denominations. Pastors who don't believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Oh, many of them will lie to you. And, you know, they'll say they believe in the resurrection, but what they mean is we believe that the story of Jesus can bring you new life in your heart. They don't believe that he rose from the dead bodily. And when I say they, I mean many of these mainline denominational pastors and the cemetery professors.
Cemetery, not seminary.
Oh, I meant seminary. Sorry. Oh. Thank you. Thank you for catching that. So, Lawrence, yeah, the church is broken.
And it's incredibly broken and all of a sudden that you see these things, these jolting events that are like, how could things have gotten so badly so quickly? Mm. How can, within a period of months, can a major, major world church sing the praises of an openly adulterous homosexual bishop and make him a bishop, and make him a bishop, even while, as I understand it, he's still living with his homosexual boyfriend?
Oh, yeah. Well, they celebrate. You know? Right. The left, liberals, those who hate God, they celebrate perversion because it's their raising their fist to God and saying, don't tell me what to do. That's why they call it pro-choice. We say you're murdering an innocent child, you're killing a little baby, and they raise their fist and say, don't tell me what to do. It's the same rebellion that began in the Garden of Eden 6,000 years ago?
Well, I was just when I see that the state, you know, which seems to have greater and greater power in our lives, is now telling the weakest and the most helpless among us, we're going to let you starve to death. A judge.
Right.
Just saying, you are going to starve to death, and your parents are, I order your parents not to intervene.
Yeah, you know, Fox News right now is showing.
Germany.
Hey, Lawrence, Fox News right now is showing video of Terry Schindler Schiavo and Hannity and Combs. I'm so glad that Sean Hannity is taking up this story and doing a pretty good job with it.
Yeah, but this is out of Hitler's Germany. This is how it began. These are the weak people. They're going to cost us money. We're just going to do away with them.
Right.
This is right out of Nazi Germany. What have we become? Mm. How wicked have we become that we allow adulterous homosexuals as bishops in our major denominations?
Now, you know what a liberal would say to you?
Mm.
That you don't have any right to compare this to Nazi Germany because you're really the Nazi because Hitler arrested homosexuals. Hitler put homosexuals in the concentration camps. And Lawrence, since you're against homosexuals, you're just like a Nazi. Now, come on, I want to hear you respond to that.
Well, the response is that they're trying to compare apples to oranges. In the book of Isaiah, we are told to judge and judge righteously. Mm. And while the homosexuals are engaged in evil, okay, you know, they're saying you're doing. I mean, I'm just stunned. It's just such an illogical statement.
Well, they do.
I'm speechless.
All right. Well, let's work on it. They say that quite frequently. In fact, if you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., they will prominently point out that Hitler also arrested the homosexuals. But in stating that, they omit that he also arrested murderers and rapists. So even the Roman Empire, which was evil, an evil empire, but they still arrested murderers. And so not everyone arrested by an evil government is being treated unfairly or unjustly. So,
Okay. Yeah,
the Nazis arrested homosexuals and murderers. And when we liberated the concentration camps, we did our best to let all the innocent people go. All the Jews go, the gypsies go, and we kept the murderers and the homosexuals in the camps.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we didn't liberate all the criminals. We liberated the innocent people who were wrongly incarcerated. So at any rate, yeah, we got to be ready for these liberals. They're very slippery and slimy.
I understand now, sir. That's a great comparison. I'm just stunned.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just like all of a sudden I've woken up and I've never seen a negative depiction of a homosexual on TV except on the news when you have a John Wayne Gacy. But on all the major channels, which I've stopped watching,
right?
You see the homosexuals as the elite, the wise, the kindly, the generous, the benevolent.
Yeah.
You know, and anybody
well, yeah, it, whatever TV show that has had a homo in the last 10 years, the homosexual, if it's a sitcom or something, he's the only one who was honest, faithful, truthful. But now that's going to change, Lawrence. You realize that?
No.
Because now that homos are so accepted in society, now Hollywood will begin to allow the homo to be the bad guy. Because that will be the true acceptance of homos when a homo could be a bad guy in a TV show or a sitcom or a movie.
Ah,
so that's coming too.
I see.
Yeah, and all along we've pretty much predicted every stage of how society would work to normalize this kind of perversion. So that's next. It will become somewhat commonplace for the homo to be the bad guy in a production.
Because it'll be so accepted that it'll be like background.
Yeah.
It'll be like part of the background.
Yeah.
You know, there's no need for them to glorify them anymore because they won't need to have any kind of special status because it'll be just like you and I so far as the TV shows are concerned.
Yeah.
By
the way, you mentioned the only negative depiction of homosexuals in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And some years ago, I started to make a list just of all different aspects of homosexuality. And it's interesting, so many of the mass murderers in America have been homosexuals. Like maybe you've heard of Orville Lynn Majors. Well, you might not have heard of him. He's not really well known. In Indiana, he was, I guess, a male nurse who killed 60 people, and he was a homosexual at the Vermilion County Hospital. A patient died every 150 hours when he was on duty. He killed 60 people. Charles Manson, his mother was a prostitute. He was an illegitimate son and spent much of his early life in institutions for stealing, pimping, homosexual rape. So that was Charles Manson. Donald Harvey killed 37 people in Kentucky. He was a homosexual. John Wayne Gacy, he's the one you mentioned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he murdered 33 boys, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, in Chicagoland area. Patrick Kearney murdered 32, cutting boys, putting them into trash bags. Bruce Davis killed 27 people in Illinois. He was a homosexual. The list goes on.
The hits just keep on coming.
Well, it's terrible. Juan Corona killed 25 people. He was a migrant worker. He did despicable things to the corpses after he killed the people, just similar to Jeffrey Dahmer, who was obviously a homosexual, raped, murdered, and even ate 13 young men and boys. And remember the California freeway killer, William Bonin?
Yes, sir.
He was executed in 96. He murdered 14 boys ages 12 to 19. He sexually molested them, tortured, mutilated, strangled. He dumped their naked bodies. One was stabbed 70 times. Another had an ice pick in his head. Others had cigarette burns. In 1969, that freeway killer who murdered 14 had been convicted of assaulting 5 boys. He should have been executed. He was put in jail, let out. 1975, imprisoned again for another rape. He was paroled in 78, and he began his homosexual rape and murder spree immediately. Police caught him while he was sexually assaulting a 15-year-old boy in his van.
Is this demonic possession? I mean, at what point, you know, does such evil, you know, become something that is literally not of this world? This is just,
well,
this is stunning. This is just jaw-dropping.
Well, let me, obviously it is, and it is an epidemic. But as far as your question, the most evil demon I've ever seen had Hillary in it. Right? So, you know, a demon could possess a human being, and that could be pretty ugly, but when Hillary enters into a demon, you're at an all-time low. Yeah. There's nothing in the Bible that tells us that, you know, demons have cornered the market on wickedness. The human heart is exceedingly wicked and deceitful above all else. And, yeah, demons are evil, and so are people. How about Richard Speck? He murdered 8 nursing students, bragged about it on videotape, which showed him sodomizing another inmate and bragging about how many inmates he had homosexual relations with. Wayne Williams in Atlanta killed black boys, and he was thought to be a racist, but it turned out he was a black homosexual. And now those are in America. There's so many more, but remember in Ireland, Scotland's Thomas Hamilton murdered 16 kindergarten kids. He was a homo, too. We'll be right back. Bob Enyard here with a live commercial break. Let me tell you about our videos. And you could get one. You could go on the internet at kgov.com, check them out, or you can subscribe to the monthly video subscription we have. For $24.95 a month, you get Mount Moriah, the evidence of the resurrection, God and the death penalty, New Testament support for capital punishment, a Bible tour of Israel. See the evidence for the Bible story. It's so much fun. And then get out of the matrix. That's where I got to debate an entire college philosophy class and their professor. That's a trip. That video, what a trip. And live from Las Vegas, you'll love them. The videos we have here at Bob and Yurt Live are so much fun, like planets, stars, and the Bible. Just check that out. It's what a blast to watch what the Bible says about the heavenly bodies. How about Bob on drugs? Well, that's, well, I was talking about drugs with a heroin addict who called into the show. The Trouble with Lawyers, that's Bob versus the Publicans. Not the Republicans, that's the second time around. This was the Publicans. Video Fruitcake, hilarious, ignorant callers, a great gift idea, Video Fruitcake. You'll love it. What else? Amy's call, Terry's call, Megan's call. Each of those videos, a different caller into the TV show Bob and Yurt Live. We used to be on TV. And about homosexuality, how to save a homosexual. We'll find out. One gets saved on the show. Taking the gloves off to save a sinner like Amy, who thought she was good enough to get to heaven, and she was sleeping around, had a kid out of wedlock. Good enough to get to heaven, and then Amy got saved. Megan's call, exposing a young woman's cold heart, a woman who has accepted abortion. So these are just some of the videos we have at Bob and Yurt Live. They're so much, so entertaining and educational. Call us, 800-8-N-YURT. one 800 8 N Yards. That's 1-800-836-9278. Yeah, this list of homosexual mass murderers, it just goes on. And it turns out that there are far homosexuals, if they're say 10% of the population, well, in high schools and colleges they are, but maybe even higher than that if you count bisexual girls, that's epidemic in many of our schools. But if they're 10% of the population generally, they sure represent a lot more than 10% of the mass murderers. What's going on there? And if you remember in Scotland, that Thomas Hamilton, who broke into a Dunblane kindergarten class and murdered 16 children and their teacher, and then he killed himself. And he was known by police to be a risk to children. That's according to USA Today. And the children of the town called him Mr. Creepy. He used to like little boys in various states of undress. So many of these mass murders. Anyway, we're going to say... hello and thank Lawrence for calling and then go to our next call. But Lawrence, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Really appreciate your call. God bless you. And I'm going to stop with that list right there. It's gross. But let's go to the phones. 1-800-8-N-YART in Aurora, Colorado. Linda, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob.
Hello, Linda.
How are you?
Doing well.
Well, I haven't called in before.
Okay.
Well, I guess I have, but for other reasons.
Oh.
Ken Scott and I were at the abortuary on 20th and Vine.
All right. Wait. Ken Scott and I, that means I know this, Linda. Linda. So, Linda, you are one of the staffers at Colorado Right to Life.
I am the only staffer at Colorado Right to Life.
All right. Well, let's let the audience know. We've got a famous caller here.
Okay. Well, Ken was actually trying to witness to one of the security guards there at 20th and Vine.
Yeah.
And he was telling him about the different levels of punishment in hell and then vice versa, the different levels of a reward in heaven. And I had not heard that. So I was wondering if you could give me some scriptures.
Well, if we're going to give any scriptures at all, we have to do warning. So warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at Bob and Yurt Live that you would like to censor anyone who dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. All right. Now, Linda, you're asking about the different levels of punishment?
Yes.
All right. Well, you might recall, as soon as I say a couple of these things, you may remember, but, and I don't know if I can remember offhand, but in Luke, Jesus said that some, speaking of judgment day, he said, some shall be beaten with many stripes, but some shall be beaten with few. For to whom much is given, from him much will be required. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, well, that's,
but I'll look it up.
Luke chapter 12. Verses 47 through 49, and that's the same three verses where he says, he was talking about judgment, and Jesus said, I came to send fire on the earth, and how I wish it were already kindled. Because he was mad at the wicked,
mm-hmm.
because of how evil they are. Remember, Jesus said, now let me ask you a question. Do you think he did when he went from village to village and city to city in Israel, do you think he did about the same number of miracles in each city, or did he do more in some places than others?
I'm sorry, my daughter was talking to me, so I didn't catch the first part of that.
That's all right. That's all right. Here's a pop quiz question. When Jesus was going through the villages of Israel and the cities of Israel, do you think he did the same number of miracles in each city and town, or do you think he did more in some places than others?
He did more.
Yeah, he did more. There were some places, like he ministered mostly up north in the Galilee, more so than in Jerusalem. He only visited Jerusalem primarily during the feasts. And up north, the three cities in which he did most of his mighty works were Bethsaida, Capernaum, and Chorazin. And those three cities, they utterly rejected Jesus, even though he did most of his miracles in those places. And Jesus said to them, it will be more tolerable for those of Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you, Bethsaida. And to Capernaum, he said, to the people who live in Capernaum. Now, Peter lived in Capernaum, but Peter repented and followed Christ. But Jesus said to those who lived in Capernaum, the city of Nahum the prophet, he said, it shall be more tolerable for the land of Sodom, in other words, for the Sodomites, mm-hmm. for the wicked people in the city of Sodom who were killed by God. Back in the book of Genesis, Jesus said it will be more tolerable for those of Sodom in the day of judgment than for you, Capernaum. That's in Matthew 11, okay. 21 through 24, showing that there are degrees of punishment in hell that God will inflict on people. In Revelation chapter 18, verse 7, we read this, in the measure that someone, to the degree, in other words, that someone is wicked, in the same measure, give them torment. And even more subtle statements, like in James chapter 3, where let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment.
Right, I remember that one.
Yeah. And Jesus talked about, in Luke chapter 20, he talked about those religious people who really rip off, they rob people of their money in the name of the gospel, and they lie to lonely people, to widows. And Jesus said, beware of those who devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. These will receive the greater condemnation. So the Bible, from beginning to end, Linda, presents this very obvious and common sense, intuitive picture that not all sins are equal, and
right.
that God is the judge of all the earth, and we need a judge, and we need a judgment day. If all sins were equal, what do we need a judgment day for? Everybody get the same punishment. You don't need a judgment day.
Now, what about levels of reward in heaven?
Well, that's definitely taught, right? Primarily by the Apostle Paul, who said that we will get rewarded in heaven, but not all believers will be rewarded. In fact, some of us will see our works burned up. Right? Paul says, he said to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 3, he said that if you build on the foundation which is Jesus Christ, then you're going to be in good shape, you're going to get rewarded. But if you don't, right? He said if you build on the foundation of Jesus Christ, then you'll be rewarded with gold, silver, precious stones. But if you don't, then your works will be burned up and you will suffer loss. But Paul says, even though you yourself will be saved, it'll be as though through fire, because all your works of the flesh will be burned up. But if anyone's work, which he has built, endures, he will receive a reward. But if anyone's work is burned, he will suffer loss. So when we get to heaven, Linda, we're going to find out if we've tricked ourselves on earth, if we've deceived ourselves on earth. When we get to heaven, we're going to find out exactly what did we do that glorified God and what did we do that glorified ourselves.
That's pretty scary.
Well, in some respect it is, but in another respect, when you start to study the Bible seriously and you get real with it, you realize you could size up your own life right here on earth. You could have a pretty good idea of when you get to heaven what you're going to expect. And I'd rather find out now than then. I'd rather know now how God is going to greet me when I see him. Because we want him to say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." But Jesus is going to wipe away the tears in heaven. You've heard that, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of Christians have this weird view of heaven that it's not real. It's this mystical, inconceivable place. And I could give examples, but they just describe heaven in ways that make it unreal. And that's not true at all. Heaven is going to be very real and very familiar. It'll also be very different, but when we get to heaven, we're going to have our five senses. We're going to have our sense of sight, hearing, taste, touch, and smell. Because we can see, going through the Bible, that all those senses, when God gives us a new body, glorified body, they're all going to be functioning. And so heaven is going to be very familiar, very comfortable, but also obviously very different too. But when we get to heaven, God will be wiping away our tears because there will be tears to wipe away. Heaven is not a magician's land where God waves a magic wand and everything is now perfect. Somebody who's a Christian but who didn't raise their kids in a godly way and their kids have destroyed themselves, what's going to happen when you go to heaven? one 800 8 NYART. That's the call-in line. This is a live commercial break. We'll get back to Linda from Aurora in a moment. But let me tell you about our Revelation albums. It's so much fun. We don't talk about end times prophecy a lot on this show, but it's an important part of the Bible. And we actually have three different albums and one manuscript on the topic. The three albums are The Last Days, which is a 7-tape album, audio tapes. And then we have Revelation, the book of Revelation, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And you could order any of those. You could find out more on the web at kgov.com or call us up. And real quick, my Revelation story, there's a detective in Indiana. And he went to the county prosecutor. The detective and the prosecutor are Christians. And the detective, who I know, he's a friend of mine. He went to the prosecutor and asked the prosecutor, "So what are you guys doing at church?" And the prosecutor said, "We're studying the book of Revelation." And the detective said, "No, you're not." And the prosecutor got a little annoyed at the detective. He said, "What do you mean, no, you're not?" He said, "Well, you're not." He said, don't say we're not. We've been studying the book of Revelation for a year at my church. And the detective said, no, you're not. And the prosecutor, who is like a notch above a detective in the political scheme of things, said, why do you keep saying, no, we're not studying the book of Revelation? We are too. So the detective, being a good detective, said to the prosecutor, well, if you've been studying the book of Revelation for a year, then tell me, do you understand it? And the prosecutor said, not really. And so the detective smiled and said, see, I told you you're not studying it. You might be looking at it. You might be reading it. And he said, here's what you can do. Listen to these tapes on the book of Revelation. And he gave the prosecutor the Bobinier Live tapes. And I subsequently got to visit that county and visited with the prosecutor in his office. And he told me firsthand, he said, Bob, I've listened through all the tapes on the book of Revelation. I'm going through again. And guess what? Now I understand the book of Revelation. It's fun to understand it. We're back. Bob and Yart Live, 1-800-8-N-YARTS, 1-800-836-9278. Let me ask Linda from Aurora, Colorado, this question. Linda, if you think of a woman who has kids and the woman's become a Christian, she goes to a good church, she loves God, but she never really grows as a Christian. Does that sound like a possible familiar scenario?
Sure.
That happens a lot, I think.
Uh-huh.
I think that happens a lot all over this country. You go to a church, and at the church, you're entertained. You go and you enjoy church, but your Christianity doesn't really take over your life all that much. And so your kids go to public school. You never really raise them as godly young men and women, and they begin to self-destruct, as young people do in America, so many of them, apart from a good Christian upbringing. And so now this woman, her kids have grown up. One is in jail. Another one has had three divorces. The other's an alcoholic. One committed suicide. They're all unbelievers. And the woman gets hit by a car and she's in heaven. And she's left behind her household, which is in a shambles. Do you think that God will eventually be able to wipe away her tears?
That's a good question. I've often wondered that.
Yeah, well, I do, but the word is eventually. God will wipe away our tears in heaven, but it's not the magic hour. It's not a magic wand where God waves a magic wand and all of a sudden you're floating in a thoughtless bliss.
Right.
The reality of what had happened to you on earth and what you did on earth will follow you into heaven. If anyone builds on Jesus Christ, on this foundation, gold, silver, and precious stones will be his. But otherwise, if it's wood, hay, and straw, then your work will be burned. And he will suffer loss, the Apostle Paul says. But he himself will be saved, yet so as through fire. You might remember in the book of Revelation, chapter 6, there Jesus was opening the seals. And he opened, I forget which it was, the sixth seal. And John saw under the altar of God, there were the souls of those who had been martyred for the gospel. And so here are people who'd been killed because they were telling others about Jesus Christ. And are they floating in heaven in this nirvana state of total bliss and contentment? Well, what they said was they cried out, how long, O Lord, until you avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? They were still very much thinking about what had happened on the earth and the wickedness that was there on the earth, and it was still wicked. Now, it wasn't their fault that they were martyred. They're the innocent victims, but they wanted God to bring wrath and vengeance against the murderers. And they were still concerned about the wickedness that was still prevalent on the earth. And so when we get to heaven, it's not like a make-believe land where we float on a cloud with a harp. Mm-hmm. It's real. It's real. God is real. Heaven is real. This life is real. And what we do on this life will affect all of eternity. And so when we get to heaven, the people who we have hurt will still be on the earth, still enduring the hurt that we've inflicted. The people we've blessed and brought to the Lord will be rewarded for that, and will be praising God. And I think that will really be the real reward, just to have the pleasure of their friendship throughout all of eternity. And the real suffering that will be experienced in heaven for a time will be our loved ones and friends who have rejected God, and we were a bad testimony or a bad witness. That will be the painful part. And that's why God will have to wipe away our tears.
Okay.
Well, sorry I just dumped all that on you, Linda.
Yeah, well, you usually do every time I see you. So.
Okay. Well, God bless you.
Well, thank you, Bob. I wanted to say, too, I don't want people to misunderstand, think I'm the only one who runs the Colorado Right to Life.
Oh, no, you're just the only full-time staffer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We have 12 other wonderful directors who work full-time jobs and yet volunteer all their precious time to try to make a difference.
Even your husband helps out, and he doesn't get paid.
That's right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people that help, but you're the staffer.
Yeah, right.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Bob.
God bless you. Bye-bye. All right. So, yeah, different levels of rewards in heaven, different levels of punishment in hell on Judgment Day, and different consequences on earth for our actions. And doesn't it have to be that way? Unless this is all make-believe, and the kind of existence that so many Christians are taught and imagine is real. I don't even understand it. But it's this make-believe reality. It's this unreality. It's just bizarre. And so they say so glibly, all sins are equal. All sins are equal. All sins are equal. How do you know all sins are equal? Oh, really? Where'd you get that from? All sins are equal. Oh, what? Where does the Bible say that? All sins are equal. Oh, I see. So where do you find that in the Bible? All sins are equal. Okay, but where all sins are equal? Oh. Okay. All sins are equal. All sins are equal. If I hear that one more time, I'm going to vomit. It's unbelievable. I've been a Christian for 30 years. I bet I've heard that 5,000 times. And you ask me, where does it say that in the Bible? All sins are equal. Well, would you like to see all these many verses where Jesus says that they're not equal? And there's all levels of punishment and condemnation and judgment, stricter judgment, lesser judgment, greater sin, lesser sin. You want to see what Jesus said here in John 19, verse 11? All sins are equal. Well, what if Jesus said, this one has the greater sin? All sins are equal. All sins are equal. Did you know that all sins are equal? Yeah, all sins are equal. I heard on, now, I think, I won't say what Christian radio station it was. In Denver, though. In Denver, Christian radio station, turn on the radio. And I think they do this just to annoy us. Turn on the radio, and I hear the Christian host saying, do you know that all sins are equal? If you steal a Tic Tac or murder someone, it's all equal. And I turn it right off. And I said, nope, nothing's changed in 20 years. We still have complete insanity as the norm in the Church of Jesus Christ. We've got a bunch of lunatics on the loose. All sins are equal. But you can so show that that's not the pastors who teach that. They don't really believe that. Right? They don't believe that. If you go to a pastor of a large church and you say, look, the Bible says that if people claim to be Christians and they're shacking up together, you should disfellowship them. Don't let them in the church. Excommunicate them. Oh, we can't do that. No, because we can't judge and we can't condemn, and all sins are equal. All sins are equal. Okay. Well, can't you? No, we can't. Okay, you can't. All right. So the next week, all you have to do to test the pastor's conviction on that is when the collection plate comes around, instead of putting money in, take some out. Just take, say, 20. Just take a 20 out and put it in your pocket. And then you'll find out if the pastor thinks that all sins are equal. And you'll find out if the church really would refuse to kick someone out. The church will, first of all, they will judge you and they will condemn you and they will kick you out if you continue to do it. They'll even call the police on you. But the fornicators who are going to church every Sunday, they're not going to judge them or kick them out. Why not? Because the fornicators are putting money into the collection plate because it makes the fornicators feel like they're okay. Hey, I go to church. I'm accepted. I put money in and everything's going to be fine. So the churches that say, oh, we have to forgive, we can't judge, and they use that as their excuse for not disfellowshipping, excommunicating church members, for example, who are unrepentant, that's not what they really believe. They don't really believe those things. They're just convenient. It's convenient not to. If the goal is to build as big a church as you can, then you have to begin to stop offending people. And if you don't want to offend people because you want to increase the amount of money coming into the collection plate each week, and you don't want to offend people, then you have to get soft on much of what the Bible says. So a very convenient way to do it in one fell swoop is to say we can't judge, we have to forgive everyone, and all sins are equal. Oh, where does the Bible say all sins are equal? Oh, I never heard that before. Where do you find that in the Bible? All sins are equal. Oh. So right here, when Jesus said that this guy has a greater sin than that guy, what? All sins are equal. Oh. And where do you find that in the all sins are equal? Oh, all sins are equal. All sins are equal. What do we have a judgment to? All sins are equal. Oh, all sins are, I didn't know that. All sins are equal. What do you do after 12 years on the air? You know what? Maybe if I just bang my head against the studio wall. Let me try that. Ouch. Maybe if I just keep banging my head against the studio wall. Ouch. Ouch. Maybe that will work. Just keep banging my head against the wall. All sins are equal. All sins are equal. All sins are equal. The next time you hear a Christian say all sins are equal, at the very least, pity him. Pity him or pity her. Because she hasn't even begun. You know how the Bible says in the book of Hebrews, you guys are stuck on the milk and you're not ready for the meat? That was 2,000 years ago. Today, the Christians can't handle the milk. Today, the Christians are lactose intolerant. They can't handle the milk. We Christians have lost it as far as the Bible's concerned. We don't have a clue. The church, generally, we don't have a clue. And so we here at Bob and Yurt Live, we're going to continue as long as the Lord enables us to do and you guys help us. We're going to continue to preach the word in season and out. You can help us sometime. Please do. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.